When did you get back? 2 weeks?
Mm.
Did you enjoy?
Yes.
Did you go to South India also, or my apartment?
I'm South India.
We're reading about first the 62nd chapter of the 10th canto, where described the amazing and mysterious meeting between Usha and Aniruddha. Usha was the daughter of who? Banasura, certainly. And Banasura was a great devotee of Lord Shiva, but unfortunately he was an asura. He had a demonic mentality. What does it mean to have a demonic mentality? Dvarima, Purusha Loke, Chara Akshara, Chara Salabhutani, Katosto Akshara, Uchite. That Krishna explains in the Bhagavad Gita, there's two kinds of living entities in this world. Only two. Dvarima, Purusha Loke. In this world, there are two kinds of living entities. The fallible, those who make no mistakes, and those who are full of mistakes. The ones who are full of mistakes really are called asuras, and they have made one big mistake: turn their back on Krishna. And as soon as a living entity, a soul, turns his back on Krishna, then he immediately has to acquire a new identity, a false identity, and that is called ahankar. And then all troubles spring from that. That we're in the material world, in our bubble of consciousness, imagining so many things, just imagining, imagining that we're the center of everything. And Bhagavatam describes that the living entities, that there are three states of consciousness. First, fourth, Turiya. First state of consciousness is called awake. What's the second called? Dreaming, swapna. And the third is called deep sleep, when there's no dreaming. So, and then the fourth is transcendental Turiya. So the first of being awake is consciousness in the mode of goodness, and that's ascribed to the demigods, and the living beings are in the mode of passion in this world, the mode of passion, and our consciousness is also dreaming consciousness. What does it mean that we have dreaming consciousness? We appear to be all awake, but actually, at least at this point, everyone appears to be awake. But actually, we're all dreaming, in the sense that consciousness in the mode of goodness means to be conscious of what is going on. But consciousness in the mode of passion means we're always living in the dreams of our mind, thinking about what happened in the past, what's going to happen in the future, and just going over and over and over again, and we don't really deal with the world at all. We don't deal with us being in the world at the present. So we're dreaming mostly, and we go through all these emotional states all day long. Just, you know, sometimes we're feeling happy, we're imagining something that's going to happen in the future, and how we did something wonderful in the past. And then we feel happy, and then we then very quickly it changes to a different state of consciousness, and we start becoming angry because this person 25 years ago told us something that really hurt us, and then we're dreaming about the past, and then we're lamenting, oh, I should have done this, and only if I said this to that person. And then the future, dreaming, oh, I'm going to get this and get that. And really we have nothing to do with being alive, even in our body at this time. So the consciousness of the living entities is compared to a dream. Just like, and Prabhupada used to say this, there is daydream and then there is night dream. So usually at night we have our night dream, and in the day we're living in our daydream. And that's what we do. So this is what happens in the illusory world when the living entity adopts a stance opposed to Krishna. He lives in the dream of him being a very important central figure in existence. And that is called asuric consciousness, demonic consciousness, because turned his back on Krishna. So Banasura, having good qualities like Jarasandha, who will later be killed by Krishna, but not by Krishna exactly. Who killed Jarasandha?
Bhima.
Krishna's instigation. Bhima killed him. So he also was such a pious person, but yet an asura, opposed to Krishna. So this Banasura, the pastime is quite interesting, because Usha, the daughter of Banasura, had a dream about a very beautiful boy, and her friend Chitraleka, so we were talking about this in the yesterday, we were talking about how there's so many hints. We played with it a bit in a speculative sense, but there are so many hints of a metaphor in the pastime, Chitraleka, and Aniruddha being, Chitraleka means literally the picture drawer, and Aniruddha is the predominating deity of the mind, and Usha is accepting and rejecting each of the different personages that Chitraleka draws until she sees the Lord of her life. And who is that? That's Aniruddha, who is this actually the super soul. So that's really going to be the satisfaction of the mind when it focuses on, gives up its sankalpa vikalpa, its accepting and rejecting, but just simply focuses on our beloved, the Lord. And until then, we live in one dream or another dream, or this dream, a daydream, or a night dream, or a lamentation dream, or a desiring dream, and this is the living in these dreams and trying to become happy in this world of dreams is called the struggle for existence in this world, and it only has one ending. And what's that one ending? Death. So it's not, we always lose the struggle for existence. No one survives. No one survives in this material world. But yet the soul will survive forever. And either consciously or unconsciously, but he will survive forever. And when we learn how to focus our consciousness on the Supreme Lord, then we actually become fully happy. And what caused Usha to focus her consciousness on the Supreme Lord, on Aniruddha? Yeah. And what happened? But why did that dream focus her consciousness? Yeah. Because she fell in love with him. So this is the actual process of Krishna consciousness and focusing our mind on the Supreme Lord. It is falling in love with Krishna, and unless we fall in love with Krishna, it is not actually possible unless we develop attraction for Krishna. It's not actually possible to focus our mind in Him. And if we don't focus our mind in Him, our mind will focus on so many other dreams. So in any case, Chitraleka, possessing mystic powers and being instructed by Narada Muni, entered Dwarka, which was protected by Krishna, and took Aniruddha out and brought her to Usha in the secret palace where no male can enter. And Aniruddha was just enjoying with Usha for how many months?
6 months.
6 months. That's a long time. He just forgot everything, because the Lord also becomes captivated by love. Aniruddha was so powerful too. So then eventually Banasura found out, and he was so upset because his daughter, young daughter, very innocent, had been compromised by this young man, and she was no longer innocent. And then Banasura was so angry. He was the eldest son of Bali Maharaj, and he himself was very powerful. And also, again, he was a devotee of Lord Shiva, and he pleased Lord Shiva so much. And Lord Shiva said, "Whatever you want, I will give you." And do you know what he asked for, Banasura? Do you remember?
1,000 arms. 1,000 arms to start with, then Shiva will protect his.
That was the main thing. I guess he was very generous, so he wanted to be able to give alms. that's a bad joke. Sorry. he had Lord Shiva to be the protector of his city, and he was very arrogant. Actually, he wanted to fight with Lord Shiva, even, and defeat him. And Lord Shiva was considering killing him, even. He thought, "This isn't proper. He's my servant and my devotee. I shouldn't kill him." But he was very angry. So he said, "You're going to be defeated very soon by someone who's the most exalted. That's Krishna." He didn't mention Krishna's name. Banasura, foolish as he was so happy that he was going to fight with someone who was because he was so powerful, who would be a good match for him. He was so happy. He didn't think anyone could defeat him. So this is, in one sense, the nature of false ego and being an asura. We live in our dream world, and in our dream world, there is one star. There's one person who's the center, and that is me in my dream world. And in my dream world, as the Bhagavad Gita says, perfect, powerful, and happy in describing demonic consciousness. And if anyone, so we think, "Oh, I don't really think I'm perfect, powerful, and happy." But as soon as anyone criticizes us, then the false ego springs up, and then we attack them, and we'll defend them all day long, because on one level we don't think we're perfect, powerful, and happy, but on another level, if anyone tries to point out anything that we do that's not perfect, we defend anyway, on a gross level or on a subtle level. And sometimes if someone says something to us and criticizes us for doing something, and then all day long we could, in our mind, we could be arguing with this person to prove that we are perfect. I mean, and of course, none of you this ever happens to. All day long, I should have said this, and I'm going to tell them that, and blah, 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 blah. So in any case, so Banasura, when he found out that his that some male was living with his daughter, it was the father. So he was so upset, and he went running to the rooms of his daughter, and he saw Aniruddha was just sitting there on the bed, wearing a garland that she had touched, and had a kumkum from her body on it, and they were playing dice together. And he was very, very beautiful, with the darkest complexion. He wasn't even embarrassed or anything like that. He was just sitting there playing with Usha, and Banasura became furious. And all the armies came, his armies he had brought with him, and they attacked Aniruddha, and Aniruddha stood there with his club, and he just smashed all the armies. But then by the power of, actually by Krishna's Lila Sakti, Aniruddha was defeated and captured by the snake ropes of Banasura. And also noted that also his father Balimraj was also captured by the snake ropes used by Vamanadeva. So then what is Krishna going to do? This beloved member of the Yadu dynasty has been captured, and on the moral level he's done something wrong, and the father is right to be upset. So is Krishna going to say, anyway, he did something wrong, he should get punished? No. Practically the entire Yadu dynasty, the armies of the Yadu dynasty from Dwarka, attacked the city of Banasura, which was named Sunitapura, which is in, it's still a city in Assam. So they came all the way from Dwarka, the western side of India, to Assam on the eastern side of India, and they came with 12 Akshohinis, and the whole battle of Kurukshetra, there was a total of 18 Akshohinis. So there was a huge army. Was it 6 or 12? Anyone remember?
12.
And then Banasura, and then they started breaking down his city. So not only did Aniruddha do something wrong, compromised his daughter, then to defend, and he was just captured the boy. You know, he did something wrong, and you know, we're teaching him a lesson. And then in retaliation for that, Krishna comes with Balaram and Padumya and Samba and so many warriors, and they start breaking down his city and attacking it. So Banasura is furious. Now remember that who does he have to protect his city? This is the major benediction. He has Lord Shiva to protect his city. Now Lord Shiva, Vaishnavanam Yata Shambhu, he's the greatest devotee of the Lord, of Lord Vishnu, of Krishna. But yet he's promised to protect the city. What's going to happen? So Banasura is furious, and he sends out his 12 Akshohinis. So a great battle starts to take place. Now, who's going to win the battle? Who thinks Banasura is going to win? Raise your hand. Krishna always wins, right? So we could think, I already know the ending. So what's the use of watching the movie, of seeing it? They call that on the internet when they talk about movies, they indicate that don't read this one because it's a spoiler. It will spoil the movie. It tells what's going to happen at the end. But we already know what's going to happen at the end, that Krishna is going to win because he never loses. He always wins in battle. He's ever victorious because he's all powerful, etc. But is it going to be boring to hear what happens, or is it going to be interesting? So this somewhat depends on our consciousness. But let us listen to see how Krishna wins, how he defeats Banasura, and remember Lord Shiva is going to be the protector of the city. And let's see how he deals with Banasura, how he deals with Lord Shiva, and in what methodologies he deals with these people who are opposing Krishna, protecting his dearly beloved Aniruddha, his grandson.
So Banasura became filled with anger upon seeing the armies of the Yadu dynasty destroy his city's gardens, the ramparts, the watchtowers and gateways. And thus he went out to confront them with an army of equal size.
So 12 Akshohinis plus 12 Akshohinis equal 24 Akshohinis. That's 33% more than was on the entirety of the Battle of Kurukshetra.
Lord Rudra, accompanied by his son, whose name is? And the Pramatas, mystic sages who always attend Lord Shiva, and they appear in many, many forms. So Lord Shiva brought, he wasn't alone either. He brought these mystic sages with him.
I mean, some of the people nowadays, they love to watch these magical movies with all the, they use animation and computer-generated figures, and people love to watch these things. But this is very exciting.
What will the Pramatas do? And not only that, Nandi. Lord Shiva was riding on his bull named Nandi to fight Balaram and Krishna on Bana's behalf. So how could Lord Shiva do this? And here's the purport. Srila Sridhar Swami states that the word Bhagavan is used here to indicate that Lord Shiva is by nature. So Lord Shiva is called Banarte Bhagavan Rudra. So he's given the title of Bhagavan here because he possesses so much power. And Srila Sridhar Swami says that he's by nature, by his very nature, he's all-knowing and thus aware of Lord Krishna's greatness. So he knows who he's fighting with. Still, although Lord Shiva knew Lord Krishna would defeat him, he joined the battle against him to demonstrate the glories of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So that's one of the things that's going to happen, is that Krishna's glories are going to become very clear. So we may think the story is boring. Of course, none of the devotees think the story is boring because we know who's going to win. But if we think of our life, our journey towards Krishna is sort of the story of our existence, taking many, many births to accomplish our going to Krishna. But eventually we're going to get to Krishna. Are we happy that Krishna is always victorious and he never loses? We're going to take shelter of him because that's what we want to do. We want to take shelter of him and we want to place ourselves as his eternally as his servant. So are we going to be happy that he's ever victorious? If we're thinking about just some story that doesn't have anything to do with us, then it's one thing. But when we think of our own story, that we're actually moving quickly to take shelter of the undefeatable, all-powerful Supreme Personality of Godhead, this makes this if we actually accept it, that Krishna is all-powerful. And not only is he all-powerful, but he's also all-merciful. And this is what's going to be demonstrated in this story. One of the things that's going to be demonstrated in this story. There's going to be so many things demonstrated in this story. And if we keep our consciousness looking for these relevant points, because nothing in Krishna's lila happens by chance or by accident.
So up to this point, and what I had said up to this point is really getting ready for the main action part of the story. And nothing happens by accident. And there are so many things that Krishna, Sukadeva Goswami, that the great acharyas, they want to tell us. They want to tell us things to make our journey to Krishna happen in a very wonderful and quick way. And if we pay close attention, we may actually find out some very deep hints in for our own progress in spiritual life. And we'll find out especially about Krishna and his nature and how he deals with different kinds of living entities.
So we just heard how
on one side there was Lord Shiva. Who else was on Banasura's side? Anyone remember?
Mystic
sages called. Who knows that? What
Mahamudras.
And who else was there? Kartikeya. And? And? Who is religion? It's a bull. Nandi the bull is there. And so Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur comments. He states that Lord Shiva entered the battle for two reasons. First, to increase Lord Krishna's pleasure and enthusiasm, because Banasura couldn't find anyone to fight with. That was Krishna also liked to fight. He has that tendency to like to fight. And second, to demonstrate that the Lord's incarnation is Krishna, although enacting human-like pastimes, is superior to other avatars like Lord Ramachandra. Srila Vishnu Chakravarti further states in this regard that Yogamaya, Lord Krishna's internal potency, bewildered Lord Shiva just as she had bewildered Brahma. In support of this statement, the Acharya states the phrase Brahma Rudradi Mohanam for Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. Of course, Yogamaya's job is to make fine arrangements for the Lord's pleasure, and thus Lord Shiva became enthusiastic to battle the Supreme Lord Krishna. So here, because one of the aspects of the 10th canto is to establish Krishna, that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and he's supreme, even more supreme, he is supreme, and even to the different devatas. So who are the main devatas? There's that Krishna deals with. First, he deals with Indradev. And Indradev, Krishna with the little finger of his left hand practically defeats him. So he doesn't need 12 akshohinis or anything. Just with the little finger of his left hand, he doesn't even deal directly with Indra. He just holds up Govardhan Hill and Indra gets the point. And then after Indra is defeated, before Indra was defeated, Lord Brahma was defeated. And then Brahma, Indra, and then right after that in the 28th chapter, Varunadev, Nanda Maharaj is kidnapped, taken by the messengers of Varunadev, and Varunadev just begs Krishna to forgive him, and he praises Krishna, you're the Supreme Lord, and offers Krishna a red carpet. When Krishna was so angry that his father had been taken by Varuna, and Varunadev was so frightened of Krishna, because Krishna was angry at him, so he came out of the city to wait for Krishna. He knew that Krishna was going to come, and then when Krishna came, he immediately said, "Your father is safe. He's over here." And then he spread a beautiful red carpet so that Krishna would be able to walk to where Nanda Maharaj was sitting, well kept on a throne. So Varuna, and then here Lord Shiva is going to personally explain that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And then right at the end of the 10th canto, Lord Shiva again, a little more indirectly, but he takes shelter of Lord Narayan. And then finally Bhrigu Muni shows that of all the three predominating deities of Vishnu, Brahma and Rudra, that Vishnu is the supreme. And then not only is Vishnu the supreme, but later on in that 89th chapter, then it shows that Krishna is even superior to whom? Mahavishnu. Because when Mahavishnu takes the child of the Brahmana, such as the explanations of Vishnu Chakravarti Thakura, they're so wonderful, so wonderful. He says, he explains how this pastime actually shows that Krishna is even superior. Not superior, they're both the same, but he has more aspects to his nature, and he's more attractive than even Mahavishnu, who is the source of all in material existence by his breathing. Just imagine how powerful one would have to be, that by one's breathing all of material existence exists, comes into being. I mean, we can't imagine that, but just think of how powerful. Just think of what material existence is. We can think of what Perth is, we can think of what Australia is, we can think about this world is, we can think of all the planets in the sky, we can think of all the sky in the sky, we can think of all the suns and the universe, and how far do the planets go back to? There's like millions of miles, and that's one universe, and there's countless universes. This universe is compared to what? Bubble. What else is it compared to? One mustard seed. And mustard seeds are very small, like this, perhaps. In a huge bag of mustard seeds. And these are coming just from the breathing of Mahavishnu. So breathing is something that we do, we're not even conscious of. So it's not even, it doesn't take energy to breathe. You're not using whatever abilities and powers you have when you're breathing. It's just happening. And Mahavishnu is breathing out all of material existence and breathing it in. Excuse me. He never coughs. He's breathing it out and breathing it in, all of material existence. And then, this is practically the closing of the 10th canto, this point of tattva, is that it's Krishna who's a cowherd boy in his supreme feature, Navayovanamsa, that he is even more powerful, more inclusive, more attractive than Mahavishnu. And he's just an expansion of an expansion of an expansion of an expansion of Krishna. Krishna's to Bhagavan Sam. So again, there's no doubt who's going to win this battle here. So why did Lord Shiva fight? Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur says that he was bewildered by the Yogamaya Lila Shakti, because Krishna wanted to, which is Yogamaya is there because Yogamaya acts independently in Krishna's pastimes, because this is something wonderful about Krishna's shaktis. He gives them independence. His potencies have independence to act. He doesn't have to. I mean, that's good management. He delegates authority. He doesn't. Because if you have something very complicated like the material existence to run, And if you had to think of everything that had to be done at every moment, all the time, then it would be no manager would do this. The president doesn't do this. The prime minister doesn't do this. They delegate their authority to others, and they give them the power to be able to do it. So Krishna has his shaktis, his energies, that he doesn't have to think about, and they make arrangements for him. So that is so wonderful, because that allows Krishna also to be surprised and astonished by the arrangements that Yogamaya makes. What's an example of Krishna being astonished by the arrangements of his internal energy? Famous example. What is one?
When the boys walked inside this Agasura.
Agasura, yeah.
Krishna was astonished.
He was astonished. Why? Because this huge snake is there. He's Agajara, he's a python. Pythons just open their mouths and wait for some creature to walk in. So the snake had opened his mouth, and the coward boys, first they were sort of thinking that maybe this is what were they thinking?
Okay.
It was a cave. So, but then they said, no, how could this be a cave? Because the Vrindavan forest was always manifesting more and more beautiful things, more and more astounding things. It's not like it wasn't the same thing every day. It was always manifesting. Vrindadevi has so many agents so that she can manifest newer and newer features in Vrindavan for the pleasure of Krishna and the pastimes of Krishna. So it's the most exciting place. So first the boys thought, oh, this is just another wonderful thing that the Vrindavan forest has manifested for the pleasure of Krishna. But then they saw, this is a big snake, and its mouth is open to invite us to come in so he can eat us. But then the desire awoke in them to have a pastime by which they were saved by Krishna. Because if you do something and someone comes to your rescue and saves you, that increases the intimacy of your loving. It increases your love and your relationship with that person. So the coward boys said, oh, let's go and Krishna will save us. But Krishna, he saw them walking in to the snake. So they wanted to walk into the snake's mouth so that they could have the pastime being saved with Krishna. But could Krishna want them to walk into the mouth of the snake? He loves them. He loves the cowherd boys so much. He loves they were actually at this point, they were calfherd boys, because they were just playing with the calves not far from Chatikara. But of course, Chatikara extended all the way to Nandagam, practically, from Kaliyaga to Nandagam, practically speaking. There were so many carts. But at this time, he was just taking care of the calves. So could Krishna willingly allow desire, his dearest friends, and his beloved calves walk into the mouth of this demon, even though he knows he's all powerful, and even though, how could he? Because Krishna loves them. So Krishna's desire was that they didn't walk in, and the boy's desire was that they would walk in for the pastime being saved. And the boys went again. Well, Yogamaya took the side of the boys. And when Krishna saw that Yogamaya had taken their side against him, taken the side of the devotees over his own desire, and the boys and the calves were walking into the mouth of the snake, then he was amazed. And how amazingly his independent Yogamaya works for the increasing of the wonder of the pastimes and especially in Braj. So this is the amazing pastimes of Krishna. This is the amazing, supremely independent personality of Godhead. So then he had the opportunity to kill Agasura and bring the boys back to life, etc. And because he was, when he walked into, first the boys walked into the mouth and they were practically, they died practically. And then Krishna walked into the mouth and he thought, how am I going to kill this demon? And then he decided, because previously when he would perform, when he would kill one demon or another, he had to do it in a human-like way, because everyone was looking at him. But once he was, all the boys and calves were unconscious, and no one could see him because he was in the mouth of the snake, because the snake had closed his mouth. So he didn't have to act in a human-like way, so he just used some of his Aishwarya Shakti, his potency of power, and just expanded and expanded until Agasura died. It was good. So he did it in a wonderful way. So he was amazed at that time at how wonderfully his internal energy works. So so Lord Shiva also was, the internal energy played her tricks on Lord Shiva, because Krishna's potency, his pastime potency, is so powerful that no one can overcome it. Either his maya in this world or his yoga maya in that world. Even Lord Balaram, when Krishna expanded himself after Brahma stole the boys and the calves, even it took Balaram 1 year before he understood that these calves and boys were actually expansions of Krishna, that they weren't demigods or anything. Because he couldn't pierce through Krishna's yoga maya. So either Mahamaya or Yoga Maya, forget it. We can't say, like, say if we decide now I'm gonna really become serious about being a devotee, I'm gonna fix my mind, I'm going to, from now on I'm only gonna eat one time a day, and I'm going to chant continuously, whether on my beads or in my mind or anything, and from now on I'm not going to do this, and from now on by the power of our minds we can't do very much, because Krishna's Mahamaya is so powerful. Very hard to overcome. We can't do it by the power of our mind, but by the power of, by Krishna's power, if he decides to lift the curtain of Maya, then Maya cannot touch us, because Krishna Suryasam Maya Hayandakan. When Krishna is there, if he decides, okay, you've struggled for so long to serve me, and you've been sincerely trying so much, and it's been very difficult, but you've been sincerely trying. Okay, let Maya go. Let the sun come out. And then, if the sun rises, then darkness goes. But until the sun rises, the sun of Krishna's mercy rises, what hope do we have of removing darkness? But unless we do our part, Why will the Son of Krishna's mercy arise? What is the impetus? And just like in the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says in the, what is it, 16th chapter, he says that those who are demonic, I cast them again into repeated species of demonic species of life. Quite interesting. Because Krishna is all powerful again, so he can free them from their demonic nature. But instead, he doesn't. Some a demon. What is that verse? You know, I heard the beginning. Maybe I don't remember. But in any case, He says that he casts them down, the demonic, into repeated species of terrible births, lower and deeper in ignorance. So Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur asks the question, why doesn't he just save them? It's an interesting question, a fair question. We say that God is all good, why doesn't he just, you know, wouldn't he? It's all gone. And this is how the material mind works. The Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur says, basically he says he doesn't want to. He has no reason to. Because with unless someone loves him, he treats them neutrally. He doesn't give them special mercy. Unless samoham savabhuteshu name dvesho stinapriya. He doesn't give people who have no, who people who don't turn to him, he doesn't turn especially to them. But mayevate papadyante mayame tantarantite. If one is one has devotion for him, then Krishna actually has devotion for that person. The supreme object of devotion becomes a devotee of his devotee. Now that's astounding. If he just gave mercy to everyone who was demonic, then probably all the living entities in this world would prefer that sampradaya. Go down the demonic world, because now they even do that anyway. Prefer that than the devotional sampradaya. There'll be no impetus. So he has his way of working out things, and we can say that his way is better than our speculative, silly ideas of what he should do. After all, he's all-knowing. But that's the way the material mind works. It says, why doesn't he do it this way? Why doesn't he do that? I think it's much better he does that. I have a better plan. Sort of like Banasura a bit. That's sort of our situation in the material world with material minds. Very much like Banasura. He should be doing this. Why doesn't he do that? He should be warm in the winter. On that one, I'm also thinking. That's how the demonic material scientists work too.
And that's how come we have global warming.
Yeah. Yes.
They want it different than it is.
And they have a different. They have a better way to do everything. Why do it the way Krishna wants? Why not, instead of farming with oxen and bulls, and using the cows to drink milk, we have a better way to do it. What we're going to do is farm with tractors. And it's the very same, then what will we do for fertilizer? Then we'll get the oil, and then we'll make fertilizer out of the oil, and that same oil we're going to make fuel to run the tractors. And then what can be done by human beings in 1 week, we can do in 2 hours with a tractor. So isn't that better? But unfortunately, it isn't better, actually, because it's not sustainable either. Because the land, by these petrochemical fertilizers, it turns into dust, and it turns into dust. And I remember the first time I saw this kind of a thing. That years and years ago, they had these. I was in Japan, in Tokyo. And in these department stores, that these apples that were this big, and I had never seen any. Have you ever seen an apple like that?
Like watermelon, huh?
It actually was this big. Now that I was thinking, and now I think about it, remember properly, at least this big. But and they were so expensive too. They were like $40 or $50. these apples, but they tasted like potatoes, uncooked potatoes, basically. But they looked really good. So this is, they have a better way. You follow our system, and we'll make apples this big, and also we'll make dragonflies this big. Big dragonflies will make. We're going to genetically modify dragonflies and solve the fuel problem. But then all we have to do is figure out how to control the dragonflies when they start being so big and eating all the humans or whatever, who knows. Because dragonflies are the most cruel, terrible of all winged bugs. Like sort of like Bonasaur a bit. Anyway. The battle is going to begin. A most astonishing, tumultuous, hair-raising battle then commenced with Lord Krishna matched against, who was Krishna fighting? Lord Shankar. And Pradyumna was fighting?
Kartikeya.
And Lord Balaram fought with Kumbhanda, who was the minister, Chitralekha's father. The minister of Banasura. And, Balaram fought with Kumbhanda and Kupakarna, two of them. Kupakarna means, what does that mean? His ears were like wells, big ears. And Samba, with Banasura's son, and Satyaki fought with Bana. Brahma and the other ruling demigods. Along with the Siddhas, this was bigger than a world war. This was a universal war. Brahma, you don't usually hear Brahma getting into these kind of fights. Along with the Siddhas, the Charanas, and the great sages, along with the they didn't fight. Because look who else is it, the great sages, were they fighting too? As well as the Gandharvas, they might have been singing, but fighting. And the Apsaras? And the Yakshas, they all came in their airplanes to watch. A great event. With sharp pointed arrows discharged from his bow Sangha, Lord Krishna drove away the various followers of Lord Shiva, the Bhutas, the Pramatas, the Guyakas, Dakinas, Yatudanas, Vaitalas, Vinayakshas, Pretas, Matas, Pisachas. Krishna brought all his ghosts and everything, and Brahma Rakshasas, all driven away by Krishna. And Lord Shiva, the wielder of the trident, shot various weapons as Lord Krishna, the wielder of the Sangha. But Lord Krishna was not in the least perplexed. He neutralized all these weapons with appropriate counterweapons. Lord Krishna counteracted a Brahmastra with another Brahmastra, a wind weapon with a mountain weapon, a fire weapon with a rain weapon, and Lord Shiva's personal Pashupatastra weapon with his own personal weapon, the Narayanastra. After bewildering Lord Shiva by making him yawn with a yawning weapon. That's a good one. But we all know how powerful that weapon is, like in the Bhagavatam classes especially. And Lord Krishna then proceeded to strike down Banasura's army with his sword, his club, and his arrows. Lord Kartikeya was distressed by the flood of Pradyumna's arrows raining down from all sides, because Pradyumna was also the father of Aniruddha. And thus he fled the battlefield on his peacock. Yes, now that's pretty good. They all had amazing carriers too, as blood poured from his limbs. Kumbhanda and Kupakarna, tormented by Lord Balaram's club, fell down dead. And when the soldiers of these two demons saw that their leaders had been killed, they scattered in all directions. Banasura was furious to see his entire military force being torn apart. And leaving his fight with Satyaki, he charged across the battlefield on his chariot and attacked Lord Krishna. I mean, there were other things he could have done. He could have surrendered. But instead, he became more and more angry, because that's what the asuric mentality does when it's when things happen that he doesn't like, especially things that he's attached to. I want this to happen in this way, and someone comes and does the opposite of what we want, and we become like the banasura within awakens, and then we become angry. He charged across the battlefield on his chariot and attacked Lord Krishna. And then how did he react to that? He became excited to a frenzy. That means he became more angry. Bana simultaneously, remember he had 1,000 arms, he pulled taut all the strings of his 500 bows and fixed 2 arrows on each string. So that's 1,000 arrows he was going to shoot at one time. And Lord Hari split each and every one of Banasura's bowls simultaneously. And he also struck down his chariot driver, chariot and horses. The Lord then sounded his conch shell. Conch shell means victory. And it shattered his heart. But yet, did he surrender? What did he do? Seeing this, so just then, Banasura was in a difficult position. Just then, Banasura's mother, whose name was Kotara, desiring to save her son's life, appeared before Lord Krishna, naked and with her hair undone. And Lord Gadagaraj turned his face away to avoid seeing the naked woman. And Banasura, deprived of his chariot, his bow shattered, took the opportunity and fled into the city. He used the mother weapon. Defeated Krishna immediately. Huh?
But Bali Maharaj is married to Vindhyavali.
But maybe he had many, more than one wife, perhaps. Would seem so. Now it's a very dangerous position. So who is supposed to protect the city? It's being destroyed. So Lord Shiva gets out his ultimate weapon, the Shiva Dvara. So we'll stop here, because then now the excitement really starts. Lord Shiva, who was Bhagavan Shiva, fighting with Bhagavan Sri Krishna. Krishna's do Bhagavan Sayam. Who will win? We know who's going to win. But how wonderful. And Krishna effortlessly does all these things. How wonderful to have a master like this. Okay, thank you very much. Any questions or comments?
What's the point of just Krishna changing people's demonic mentality? But we see he was able to do it with Bhutana. He was able to, in a moment, change her from being a demon to being a mother.
He killed her. You see, it's because he saw the best part in the terribleness of her trying to kill him. He saw that she's come to me approaching me like a mother. So he found something good in that, because in her approach to him, and he took that. But there was the direct relationship.
Demonic and 1%.
Huh?
She was 99% demonic and 1% devotional.
Well, not even. She was just imitating devotional.
So then the question is, why Krishna thrusts demons down?
Because they don't even imitate devotional. That she did something directly in relationship with him. And that to do something directly in relationship with Krishna, even imitative devotion, is wonderful. And she, and Krishna purified her directly. So one could say, as you're saying, why doesn't Krishna do this with everyone? And the answer is the same that Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur gives, that he doesn't want to. He has no impetus to do it. They're not acting in relationship with him. Putin at least was imitating a devotee. And they have nothing redeeming in that way. So that could so at least we can imitate being devotees. So it's good.
Can it also be said that Krishna
we could also read what exactly what Krishna talked about.
That Krishna will never interfere with the free will of the living being.
Except he did with Putana.
But Putana actually faked, she took initiative.
Well,
she reciprocated with her initiative enormously. But if you're saying that the divine person doesn't want to have anything to do with Krishna, then in reciprocation,
Krishna doesn't want to have anything to do with them. And you could also say that it's the laws of nature that thrust them down. It's not Krishna directly, because he's neutral. He's like the judge.
It's a certain system in action.
Yeah.
As you sow, so shall you reap. And ordinarily he's not interfering with the system. That's his own system.
Yeah. It's like the judge has the power to give someone $1 million, and he has the power to send someone to prison for his whole life. So we don't complain when someone's been sent to prison for his whole life because he's a mass murderer. Then we don't say, well, the judge has the power to award him $5 million. Why didn't he do that? Anyway, it's all sort of obvious. And if they did go back to Godhead, what would they do there? They don't love Krishna.
And we'd all come back here.
But Tom would be done in mother in the spiritual world.
Like a mother. She'd be a nurse, but not directly with Krishna.
But in a moment she gave up. 99% demonic mentality.
Because she had a direct relationship with Krishna, she approached Krishna. And these people don't, like Tina was saying, don't approach Krishna.
Is there something behind that as well? You know, that she got that opportunity? Is there some previous lives that
she was really bad. Bad family.
Who was she in the previous life?
She was trying to develop, wasn't she?
Huh?
She attracted development in a previous one. And she thought of Raj's sister. She was attracted to
Bhavanadev.
She was also angry with Bhavanadev because he took Bhavanadev's property.
That's right.
She came as a mystic yogi, as a renunciant, wanting to kill all the children in Braja. And she had matted hair. But she was afraid. She was afraid of the warriors that Nanda Maharaj had protecting Braja, because they had arrows, special arrows that had the potency of Lord Narayan, because he was a devotee of Lord Narayan. So she changed herself. She took a different tact. She didn't, because she had been wandering around Braja in a demonic way, killing all the children, young children, drinking their blood. So, but to go to find, because of her fear of Nanda Maharaj's warriors, she accepted a most beautiful form, and she, practically speaking, imitated Lakshmi Devi in saying, my breast is full of nectar, and when this child drinks this, and she criticized Yasoda, and said, let him drink this, it will fill him with, it will make him healthy and strong. So she really bewildered everyone And I think even Jiva Goswami describes that. By her beauty, she bewildered everyone. How could someone beautiful be demonic? So beautiful. It's completely bewildered. And then she came, and then she put her breast into Krishna's mouth. Krishna was angry at her because she was trying to kill all the children of Braja, and he began to suck her breast milk, and he sucked out her life, and he was she felt what was happening. She tried to push him away, saying, "Child, leave me," and Krishna wouldn't leave her, and he was kicking her at the same time. He was so angry with his lotus-like feet. But she had touched, somehow she had touched his transcendental body, and he had placed his lotus-like lips on her body. And by her, and like Agasura was similarly purified by the touch of Krishna. And also, this is one of the specific characteristics of Krishna, that he gives liberation to all the demons that he kills. Kamsa, because they had such direct touch with Krishna. And when they died, and also, and this is actually discussed to some degree, this point, in relationship to Maharaj Vena, that he didn't get the benefit of Sisupala, who died, who was always thinking of Krishna, because he was just demonic. He wasn't thinking of Krishna when he died. So he didn't get any benefit. Like Sisupala became liberated, Kamsa attained Supramukti, Putana, because they were thinking of Krishna. "Oh child, leave me. Oh Krishna." But Krishna was so kind, he wouldn't leave her. Benefited her. This is Param Satyam. Okay, we better stop. It's getting late. Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai. Krishna ki jai.